Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
I'm told by some of my great friends that I have a voice for print and that I must remember to remove the pebbles from my mouth so that I may be clearly understood. They're right. My diction is terrible. And this is one of those times that I want to be understood because we're going to talk about Christmas and science. As we approach Christmas, I'm struck by what's not in the news. It's that negative space that always tells a story. You trace the border of it, that empty space, and along those lines on the edges, you learn the secrets of culture. And of course, this is scientific news too. Amazing scientific news, a breakthrough, something fantastic, but we rarely hear about it here in America, and it falls into the negative space. But in Denmark, doctors have cured Down syndrome. Amazing, isn't it? No babies have Downs anymore. How do they do it? Abortion. Now, some of you are pro-life and others are pro-abortion, and I'm not telling you what to think, how to think, how to feel. I'm just telling you how I think and how I feel. But I'm going to ask you to put your thinking caps on here. For the purposes of argument, let's talk about the choices we make, because that's how science works. We've already mapped the human genome. We know that chromosomes and genes produce certain results, certain humans, certain types. And it's reasonable to assume that human beings will abort children who don't have the characteristics sought by their parents and by the larger culture. So will those babies with certain diseases be aborted? What about autism? Is that next? Or what if there's like a gay gene or genetic predisposition to certain types of cancers or other problems? Let's say it's not about physical health, but beauty. Because in the future, maybe we want to use science to create a better self, a race of physically and intellectually dominant people. Blue eyes, blonde hair. It's all there for us now. It's why some in Germany loved Margaret Sanger, the Planned Parenthood icon. And she's often mentioned today, but they forget about what she did back then or what she was loved for back then. Either way, it looks like we're going to remake ourselves into some other type of human being. We won't have accidents or miracles, and all of humanity will be shaped by scientific reason without all that bothersome moral stuff. And even now they're telling you that this will be different, that we will be able to reap the benefits of pure scientific reason without bogging it all down with the weight of some antiquated moral sense. It might be fantastic indeed to live in a world where the only universal value is one of scientific reason. Or it might simply be what C.S. Lewis, the great Christian moralist, warned about years ago. Betty and I loved his Narnia stories for our children in the movies when the boys were young. But he also wrote about something else. Didn't involve lions and magical beings and Turkish delights. And you might want to consider this book a gift for Christmas. It is his book, The Abolition of Man. And while you're thinking about what they're doing in Denmark and what they will do across all of Europe in matters of months or years, let me read you from part of his book. In a sort of ghastly simplicity, we remove the organ and demand the function. We make men without chests and expect of them virtue and enterprise. We laugh at honor and are shocked to find traitors in our midst. We castrate and bid the geldings to be fruitful. Welcome to the Chicago way. Don't worry, we'll lighten it up a bit. Jeff Carlin, WGN producer par excellence, and I are joined by the Tribune's editorial board member, columnist, and spiritual sister of the Chicago Way, Christian McQuarrie. And there's a lot to talk about, from holiday movies, like The Darkest Hour, and other things. So let's talk.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man.
Castle.
There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand, defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso in a tower by the river. Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way.
Castle. Okay, Jeff, now that I've, I guess, saddened everybody or upset everybody at the with the abolition of man and the destruction of the culture.
Really getting in that holiday spirit.
Yeah, I don't know why. Why am I like this?
Well, things are important to you, John, and I think that's what makes you John Cass.
Yeah, right. Things are important. Like a job, like working.
Like working, like a job, like friends, family.
What about the mall?
Is the
mall important to you? I don't know if you noticed, but I went to I went to the movies because you said we must talk about movies.
Movies, yes.
And I was so sick of politics that I just had to
do it. Oh, right?
So I go to the show.
Which mall?
It was the 9:30 show of The Darkest Hour. And I couldn't – the only one I found – it was in Orland Park, so I drove all out there with my son Peter. Spirit was still sleeping. He's like, let me sleep. So we go out there, and it turns out that the 9:30 show had already been sold out.
What?
By some group.
Oh.
They just bought it. And I'm like, you know, that's the first time I didn't do that whole credit card thing.
Right, yeah.
You know, pick my own seat. So we went to the mall, and I had to get some stock pots, you know, because
sure.
We're doing the cast onion soup for Christmas. And I wanted these proper 20 quart stock pots. Got a good deal.
Yeah.
Bed Bath and Beyond.
Yeah. Was it in the Beyond? Or?
That's when you think of me and Jeff Carlin.
Yeah.
When you think of Jeff Carlin, the burly Viking, Celtic Viking that he is, you don't think Bed Bath and Beyond.
No.
Although there's some good stuff there anyway.
That he has seen on TV section is worth a perusal. You didn't check out the As Seen on TV section?
No.
Oh, that's the best. They have everything, any of those As Seen on TV, you know, the Chop Wit or whatever it is, the ShamWow, like all that stuff.
The ShamWow, I got, that's a ripoff.
Yeah, it is. But
those the Handy Bundler, that's another one.
But they have, I mean, you name it, they have it. They'll have those lights, they have those Snuggies, they have that microwave
Snuggies
cover.
Are backless. You know that?
Yes. Well, it's just a blanket with sleeves on it.
So you walk around.
So you can you don't wear it. You don't wear it
naked.
No, you wear it on the. You use it on the couch. It's just a blanket with sleeves, so you can reach your beverage or your snack or your remote, and you don't have to.
What about those pajamas they sell?
That I don't.
It looks rather Fredericks of Hollywood.
It does.
Today, doesn't
it does. And
it's
they have a mermaid version of it too.
And she kicks her legs.
Yeah.
Like what? Please, okay. You know, this is a family hour. You know?
Right.
I don't want to hear about your sexy pajamas. Your cheap satin pajamas, whatever.
Yeah, come no on. Thanks.
What happened to good woolens?
Manly wool.
Right. So I saw this lady, this woman. She was freaking out. She had three kids. One, and I can't wait to hear from Kristen about this. One was pulling. There were three kids pulling her in different directions. One was doing the back arch flop on the floor.
Oh, jeez.
The other was screaming, no, 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 no. And the third was just crying. And she looked up at me and she said, oh, Merry Christmas, like a frazzled mom. And I'm like, Merry Christmas, madam. And I kept walking because I wanted to help her, but it wasn't my place.
No. So, well, you know, I encountered something the other day. I was at Walgreens up by us. And there was a gentleman, probably mid to late 30s, and probably a three-year-old boy with him, maybe three, four, but not no older than
a
that.
A gentleman, meaning like properly dressed?
No, I'm just being polite.
Oh.
I'm in Walgreens, and all of a sudden this child comes running at me down an aisle. And this guy isn't nowhere to be seen.
Right.
And the kid runs past me, and I'm like, okay, what the heck? So I go about my business, and I wander around and I see this kid comes by me again in another aisle. I'm like, what the heck is going on here? Finally, this guy comes around the corner after he was calling to his son. I mean, he was just calling his kid, trying to get him to come to him. Meanwhile, the kid doesn't care. The kid's just, I mean, this was a little
demon.
Kid.
Demon.
Right.
Mall demon turned angel turned demon.
Right. But the audacity of this guy, because then finally he scooped up the kid and they went to go, he was trying to get a photo. He'd photo printed or something.
What was audacious about the father?
That he lets his child run free in a Walgreens.
Oh, no. I think you're wrong, sir.
Really?
Listen, all children, the way I approach it, being old school, found out that the best way is a series of wind sprints, like about 40 or 50, 50-yard wind sprints before going to the mall. You know,
having
physical exercise to knock some of the boy out of
him. Sure.
Okay? But when you can't do that, did you ever – you never heard about my mom's trick?
Mm-mm.
When we were boys in the days when you actually put harnesses on children, mm-hmm. I think they do it now, too,
they do,
right?
Too, yeah.
We had, like, these little harnesses, like leather.
She had Disneyland a lot.
Oh, yeah. Like, she had, like, three little terriers with her. And we wouldn't behave, and she would do the Mrs. McGillicuddy trick. Ever heard of that?
Mm-mm.
All right, we're crying, we're whining, we're on a bus or in the mall or something. Mommy, I'm not your mother. Yes, you are. You're our mom. Mom, you're our mom. I'm not your mother. Unhand me. Let go of my hand. Speak to the store manager. Who are you? I am Mrs. McGillicuddy.
Uh-oh.
Oh, that scared the crap out of us. Like, where's our mom? Be mm-hmm. mom again. No, I shall not be your mother. You know, she was in Little Theater and in Guelph, Ontario, and she'd play. She wouldn't break character.
That's awesome.
And it's terrifying to
yeah.
a child. You know, psychological warfare.
Sure.
Here's another one. I wrote about it last week. Fabric store. What, did you like going to the fabric
no.
store? No. I mean, some guys did, and I'm not saying, I'm not trying.
Sure.
But I think most male boys, if you say, let's go to the fabric store, they'll be like my kids. They will just freak out.
Yeah.
So that's a threat. You have to keep the psychops going. So you walk away from the kid at the mall and let him get lost or something. No?
Yeah, but that wasn't this. This guy wasn't intending. He was just an unattentive parent. So like he scooped his kid up, walked over to – I mean he was a small kid. He was a big guy, bigger than me. I mean he was a tall guy.
Yeah.
No problem holding his child. So he goes, he gets his, asked about a photo he had mm-hmm. tried to get printed, and he puts his kid down and he's talking to the photo guy and the kid takes off and just starts running around. And so then the guy is getting ready to leave, ready to check out. So he's waiting in line and his kid's just running around the store, running all over Walgreens, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth.
I hate that.
And so then he just starts calling to his kid. I mean,
shouting?
Yeah, shouting his kid's name across the store.
Murgatroyd.
Yeah.
Murgatroyd.
Exactly. And I'm like, what the heck is wrong with you? I mean, off the sheer fact that this guy needs to sit down and watch some of these snatching videos. Have you ever seen these online when they show a video of like a family is out to dinner or at the store and the mom is looking at something and the kid is, you know, at her feet and then all of a sudden someone takes the kid and then the kid's gone and the mom freaks out?
That happened. You know what? Okay. Betty, she stopped going to the store with the kids after Spiro got lost. He got lost. This is before iPhones or anything. He gets lost at the Marshall Fields in Oak Brook. And she can't find him. She starts screaming, Spiro, Spiro, Spiro. No, Spiro. She runs to the security. They shut the whole store down. The doors came down.
Jeez.
And they're looking for him. And you know where they find him? In the middle of one of those circular coats.
That was me as a kid. All the time. My mom would not stand for any shenanigans when I was a kid in the store.
Right.
None.
So, but you did?
But I would. Oh, yeah.
You would pinch yourself by her, by saying, Jan Carlin, by saying that you would hide. She wouldn't stand for shenanigans, but you would hide in the coat.
Oh, yeah. I would hide in the coat thing. And then my mom would kind of pull the similar thing to you where your mom were, and she would just leave. Like, she would just announce, all right, well, I can't find you. Where are you? Well, I'm leaving, because she knew I would be in one of those things, a little turn, you know, the coat rack.
Yeah.
Well, good luck getting home and all that. And, of course, I'm like, Mom,
mommy. Well, I got to say, try the – you can't – not that our culture is so modern that men can easily become Mrs. McGillicuddy, you know, on cue. If you need it – you guys listening to me, if you need to be – have a male character – that is stern and stares over the tops of his glasses and has a sort of like a superior intellect and a small little smirk offering derision. Feel free to become Mr. Cass.
Right? That's a good one.
Daddy, I'm not your father. I'm Mr. Cass.
Yeah.
Yeah, and scare the – because you got to – psychops.
Yeah.
Psychops, man.
Oh, for sure.
This poor woman, she was – I went over and got the stock pots, and she's – I can hear her. I'm still in – I'm in cookware now, and I can hear her. Please.
Oh, man.
I felt so sorry for her. What do you do? Now, you have nieces and nephews.
I do.
Are you foolish enough to take them to the mall.
No, I'm not. No, what we did when they were younger, I mean, they were probably five, maybe, mm-hmm. I think it was.
Scared of Santa time?
Yeah, and we took them to, which was always a good trick, we took them to, they went to Disneyland, our whole family went, and they were actually, I mean, they're pretty well behaved. I mean, they're twins, and they never really were ones to kind of wander off or freak out much, so they're lucky in that regard. But the little one, my brother's son now, Willem, he is bullheaded. You can't, I mean, he's
Willem the Conqueror.
Oh, gosh. Right? He is. He is, I mean, you can't talk to that kid. At least the other kids you could reason with. They're very much, they would listen to you, or you could give them an idle threat and they would think it was real. This kid, unflappable.
Whatever happened to Dustin the Fanny in the store with everyone looking at you? No one does that.
No.
You can't do that. You can't. You don't want to give in. You know, first you don't want to hit your child.
Right.
It's why would you want to do that? But can you pinch your child where you smile? Because my mom used to do the wrist pinch, like above the thumb. Okay, just above the thumb in that soft fleshy part, and she had nails because women had nails, sure. Still do, and she would just smile. She would smile like, "Would you please look at me?" Would you please? And the nails would go in.
My mom was the ear. She'd pinch the ear.
Yeah.
That would always put you down. Or if she was really mad, she'd grab like the short hair on the side of your head, and she'd just put her hand next to you and just kind of twist it. And she'd be like, "Listen to me." And you'd be like, "Okay."
I know. Now they go to jail for such things. I don't know. Should my mom have been sent packing to the Hoosgow for becoming Mrs. McGillicuddy?
No, there's a vast difference between reprimanding a child and trying to control a child versus abusing a child.
Isn't that abuse, though, when your mom says she's not your mom? She's Mrs. McGillicuddy?
If she's
doing... She's like the female sergeant major of the Royal Fusiliers. Okay, so let's talk about something else before Kristen. Is Kristen coming in?
Yeah, she'll be here in a minute.
All right. Movies, okay?
Yeah.
Holiday movies, man. Have you seen Darkest Hour?
I haven't. Good.
Okay, here's how good it is. Cass cried in Darkest
Hour. Oh, wow.
Yeah. And not only that, I cried in Into the Storm with Brendan Gleeson playing Churchill. I did not cry. I've been on a Churchill fix.
Mm-hmm.
I also watched the other night, I had to purchase it. It was like for $12. I couldn't rent it.
Yeah.
It was one by Simon Ward. It was a Richard Attenborough film, Young Winston, with the lovely Anne Bancroft as Jenny, the mother, the Lady Jenny Churchill. And Simon Ward, a pretty boy. I mean, he has the prettiest face, like a guy whose face is begging for facial hair, like a beard like right. Yours. He can't have it.
Right.
I didn't buy him as the young Churchill, but Darkest Hour with Gary Oldman?
Yeah. I mean, you wouldn't know it was Gary Oldman, right? I mean, unless you knew it was Gary Oldman, from what everything I've seen and everybody's talked about it, that the work they did is so good.
I got a secret. In all the Churchill movies that I've seen, there is a passage where he recites the poetry of Thomas Macaulay.
Then outspake brave Horatius, the captain of the gate, "To every man upon the earth, death cometh soon or late. And how can man die better than facing fearful odds for ashes of his fathers and the temple of his gods?"
Yes, Jeff Carlin, that's the part I was looking for. And it's recited by Churchill in various forms in all these three films that I mentioned. Macaulay is also carved into the walls of the Tribune Tower.
That's right.
In the part of the Tribune where I walk through every morning when I'm here, my favorite, there are many remarkable quotes from Western civilization about the importance of freedom and freedom of speech and ideas. And the quote is, "Where there is a free press, the governors must live in constant awe of the opinions of the governed." Lord Macaulay.
Yeah.
And then I'm thinking, this guy, And so, I don't know, just a little Churchillian secret. In all those Churchill movies, if you're at the Tribune, you'll see that. And I love that movie.
Yeah.
What happened last week? I can't remember last week. Isn't it appalling? Can't even remember what I had for breakfast. What a match. Thank you. When I was a boy, when I was at school, I had a phenomenal memory. Phenomenal. Yeah. I got a prize for reciting The Lays of Ancient Rome. Macaulay. The whole of it. I knew the whole damn thing. Word perfect. Start to finish. Got a prize for it. Then out spake brave Horatius, captain of the gate. To every man upon this earth, death cometh soon or late. And how can man die better than facing fearful odds? For the ashes of his fathers and the temples of his gods.
Kristen McQuarrie's here.
Hi. Good morning.
She's got like a face, though. You're kind of like, what?
No, I'm just, I have my coffee.
Oh, she's got her big mommy mug.
Yes.
Of coffee.
Haven't had quite the full dose yet, so.
Have you, are you in need of a lot of coffee because of like holiday stress? Mom and kids?
Oh, I feel like I'm always in need of a lot of coffee. It's never strong enough. I need stronger coffee so I don't have to drink so much of it. I actually lie in bed in the morning, and you know, it's so cozy, and you're in your flannel sheets, and you just want to roll over and go back to sleep. And one of the things that gets me out of bed, not only, you know, having to get children up and dressed and off to school, but thinking about my first cup of coffee.
Really?
Yeah, I really love it that much.
And do the kids run in and they wake you up like, Mom, wake up?
Oh, gosh, no. They're now trained? They're not teenagers, but they have to be, you know, lights on and
coerced.
Interrupted numerous times. Blankets come off. And then at some point, you know, I turn into the military mom.
What am I holding in my hand, Kristen, for the magic of radio? What is this?
It looks like a cup of styrofoam cup of coffee.
It's a cup of water.
Oh.
And I will tell you that, okay, we're talking about abusing children for the holidays.
Is that our theme today?
Yeah. One of the things that I learned to do was take a little Dixie, you know, little Dixie cup, like from the bathroom.
Oh, boy.
And I say, feet on the floor. This is years ago, right? Feet on the floor. Because, 5 minutes. Feet on the floor. Okay. Go into the bathroom. They can hear it run. I let it run till it's cold. Two little Dixie cups.
Not till it's warm.
No. I don't want the tepid. No, I want cold water. Uh-huh. Two little Dixie cups.
You want the water that's still coming in right off the water main, off the street that's below ground.
I want it
below
from the
ground,
icy mountain where, you know, from the springs. And then walk right in. Then there's 4 steps from that bathroom. So they know. 1, 2, 3, 4. Boom. They get hit.
Really? Did they share a bedroom and so you could get both of them at once?
They had that. Well, I don't have to do that now. I'm talking about when they were,
right.
Like, you know, eight, nine
yeah.
years old.
Yeah.
Like enough of the, because I don't want to, because here's what happens. I don't care, but Betty does. Then she gets Nevra, like, wake up. I told you to wake up. Then she's got Nevra. And guess who gets paid back? Nevra is a paid forward thing.
Okay.
I get it, right? Mm-hmm. I don't want to have her aggravation on me.
Right.
You know, when the boys were young.
Sure.
So I would just go, and all you do is do that once.
On the face? Do you drop the water on their face?
Not up there. I don't like throw it so it
you
goes
don't waterboard
into their
them.
Nose.
Okay. No waterboarding.
No waterboarding. But I did. It's good on the chest and on the neck and the shoulder areas.
All right.
And ice cold water. And then they hear it. So they know. You say, it's like awkward conditioning, right, Jeff?
Yep.
Feet on the floor. Last warning, get in the water.
Yeah, maybe that's what I'll do next. I do feet on the floor with my daughter. She's harder to get out of bed. And
what is with them? Why do kids need a lot of sleep, don't they?
They do. I've always heard you grow when you sleep, and who doesn't want to lie around in bed a little longer? We all do.
So let's start the school day at 9 o'clock or 9
p.m. There's a lot of science behind that says that kids do better if they start later.
Yeah, I mean, I wish they were in school longer, definitely. I'm happy with them starting at 7:45. I'd like if they were in until 4:45. But yeah, it just the whole morning, my sisters and I talk about this. It's really sometimes the most stressful part of the day.
Especially for moms.
Hey.
Yes, I mean.
Oh, you got a million things. And you're working. So you're thinking about your own thing and you're thinking about, you know.
Yes, just that getting them out of bed and off to school, it's only 45 minutes.
I hate oatmeal. I hate the way you make oatmeal. It's not creamy enough, Kristen.
I'm not at my best. I'm just going to put it that way.
What do you make them for breakfast?
My daughter does not eat breakfast. It makes her ill. We learned that at an early age, so she has a snack early at school, but she doesn't eat breakfast. My son eats cereal for the most part.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Yeah. They need something. Is it everything in the morning that bugs your daughter? Because I couldn't do sweet stuff. Like I couldn't do any sugary cereals. It would give me my stomach cramps.
Turkish delight.
I think she's not hungry, and so if you force her to eat, it will come back.
Yeah.
So it's no good. And these kids are coddled now. They get a snack, then they have lunch. It's not like she's going the whole day starving and barefoot and cold and hungry and clawing around.
I say crumbs. 5 o'clock in the morning, physical exercise, 6. 6 begin Latin, conjugation of verbs.
Excellent.
No, it's nothing like that. I'm still making their lunches for them.
You are just a nice mom. But when you went to the mall when they were younger, how bad did it get? I just want to know. Because we were talking about this earlier.
In terms of just my stress level?
I saw a woman the other day. I wrote about it. This woman, poor woman, at the Orland Park.
Orland Square Mall?
Bed
Bath and Beyond.
Yeah, I can't even say the name. But I found two stock pots there. I heard that.
Oh, yeah.
So I went in there, and I was telling Jeff she had three little kids. Okay,
oh boy.
Like 6, 8, and 9. And three of them are pulling in different directions, and one is doing the arched back, limp leg.
Gosh,
twist.
At 6, usually that's more 2, 3, but go ahead.
Yeah, but whatever. I didn't study the children like some weirdo in a mall. But and she looked at me and said, Merry Christmas. And I'm like, Merry Christmas. And I just kept walking.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Because, you know,
that's
you don't want to get involved. You know, you don't want to shame the woman by staring at her like, can't you control those little demons of yours, madam?
Yes, don't do
but
that.
But what do you do when they...
You pack up the stroller and you go home. I mean, that's what I used to have. They have a window, you know, where they can behave and be in control of themselves. And then at some point they break down. And I'm just not one of those moms who's going to, first of all, I don't like to shop to begin with. So I admire people who spend the entire day at the mall with strollers and kids are taking
online,
naps.
Online, right? That's what people do. Right? When you have kids, you shop online. You don't have to
buy
into the...
Yeah, but I've probably told the story before, but you do things as a parent that you swear you're never going to do. I used to be the parent or the non-parent at the grocery store seeing kids in their pajamas, you know, in the grocery cart and thinking, that cart is so dirty. Can't you put clothes on the kid before you bring it out? And then sure enough, I had two kids back to back. I needed to go to the grocery store one morning. So I have a newborn and a 20-month-old, and I had C-section, so I'm a mess, you know.
Right.
And I have my 20-month-old in the cart in pajamas with a lollipop. And
touching the lollipop.
Oh, I mean,
it's
just
okay.
Candy at, you know, 7 in the morning just to keep her occupied so I could do a quick run down the aisles. And the baby is wailing, screaming. And I have this lady behind me, you know, trying to help. And, that poor baby's hungry. And I'm just like,
shut
you know
up,
what?
Lady.
I'm going to be out. I just stayed calm. Yeah. You know, my baby is screaming. And you know that newborn wail. It's just, it's
piercing.
It's piercing.
But
it's
she's
hard
the
to
mom,
listen
so
to.
You understand the small frequency differences between real, you know, which you forget when you're don't have. You know, like just a couple, like an octave difference means different things. So you're like, it's okay. Just
well, I was panicking too. I don't. I never like my babies to cry, and I don't like the sound of other babies crying. But there was nothing I could do. I'm standing in the store aisle. I'm not going to go whip my shirt off and nurse at this exact moment. I'm 5 minutes from home. The baby's going to cry while everyone's checking out at the.
Too bad.
Yeah. Just, it happens. But babies, I just remember looking at
too. Okay, deal with it.
I just remember looking
Jesus
at
love the babies. Okay,
looking at myself from above and thinking, "Oh my God, what you're that I person." Done. Ugh. Yes.
I'm the same way with my cats. I know they're different cries they make.
But they're cute. Yeah.
I know what 1 minute whisk this cry means. I need some food. That cry means.
But when you take them to the store, cat? Do you dress them properly?
Oh, of course. Oh, yeah. They have pants and their coats and
little
their hats.
Eaton Jack coats. Absolutely. And like blue, navy blue
little
shorts.
Little catnip. They're dipping in and just. Mm-hmm. And you're pushing them around in the little car.
Yep.
Cart occupying them.
They mm-hmm. love it.
So you were like the easy mom. You're like easy mom at the mall. You're like, okay, okay.
I mean, I didn't ever
you
freak
didn't say,
out on
you
my
didn't
kids.
Say if you, I think we'll have to go to the fabric store.
Oh, my God.
That's like psychops.
Just torture.
Right?
Torture. Yeah. I mean, we did the mall thing, but we did more of the playland, just trying to get from one nap to the next nap. You have to occupy your time. And
This is how culture devolves and crumbles like a cookie in a sea of milk.
Yes. Well, while you were working, I'm sure Betty never did such things. She was reading the Constitution to the boys.
Betty, yes, she was reading
morning.
Coleridge and Kipling.
Yes.
No, what she did was she would threaten them with, I think we have to go to the fabric store now. They're like, no, mommy, no. Oh, yeah. There's other things, too. You could have a different personality. My mom became Mrs. McGillicuddy.
Oh, it's
weird. What else is going on in the world besides our little issues here? Come on, give me some news.
Well, what do you think of? So I watched your interview with Jeannie Ives, which this race is getting more and more interesting. I think.
Mm-hmm.
I think Governor Rauner is maybe he kind of underestimated her, or even is still, because I noticed she kind of did some editorial board rounds. She's talking to you. She's kind of been all over the place,
right.
And now he wants to come in and meet with the Tribune editorial board.
Oh, good.
In a few days.
I'll call him to come to the. But I don't want to do it on the podcast like right before Christmas. Who's paying attention?
Oh, people would listen. I mean, you don't have to. What's he doing for Christmas? It could be a lighthearted podcast. You don't have to.
If I have, I would love to have him on for a lighthearted podcast because there's funny things he can say. And the story about, I keep telling him, the story about how he was chased around the car by the bear.
Right.
It's hilarious. Especially if you had a few beers. It's just hilarious. But he's got serious things to deal with, which is Gene Ives is not going away.
No.
And I don't know how he's going to, how does he...
I don't know. I mean, he has a lot of money to. We haven't seen the teardown yet of Jeannie Ives, but it's coming. Mm-hmm. She knows that.
Mm-hmm.
So he will kind of take down her exterior to an extent with his money. That's inevitable. But I don't know. It's such a good question because he really. I watched the press conference when he announced that he was going to sign the public funding of abortion bill expansion, and he did seem very somber and a little bit scared.
Like he went right through the ringer. Like he knew this was going to cost.
But did he? That's what I want to know. Did he know that he literally reached into the heart of the conservative movement and ripped out the heart? Does he know that he did that?
Or did he put it in by doing that?
What do you mean?
He said that he would not be a social justice warrior, which is why I supported him. Personally, in the column and the Tribune liked him editorially. He was going to be a guy, I'm not getting into social justice issues, let's deal with finances,
mm-hmm.
right?
Right.
And then what does he do? The only social justice stuff he does is to the far left.
Well, there's nothing he can do about bills being sent to his desk. He didn't initiate those things. I didn't say he did. Yeah.
But he could not sign them.
That's the primary issue with the abortion bill. He could have amendatorily vetoed it. He could have toned it down. He could have vetoed it outright, which is what he said he would do. And then he did the opposite. He signed it.
Right.
So, so for somebody like Jeannie Ives, and I don't know if you remember this, but a couple of years ago, she wrote a really moving op-ed about her fifth son. And how they discovered at the 20-week appointment that he was not going to survive outside the womb. He had all kinds of medical issues. Mm-hmm. And she carried it to she wanted the baby to die naturally, and this was a decision she made. And I can't imagine what the next 20 weeks were like as a pregnant person walking around and having people look at you and smile at you and you knowing what is coming.
That's a strong woman.
She is extremely strong, and she's kind of this combination of really hard and soft. You know, she has this very soft side, but she doesn't let you see it very often, but it comes through obviously in this piece that she wrote. And so to her, somebody who's very strongly pro-life, I think this is just something she feels she has to do. You know, even if she takes him out and can't win in a general election, or even if she doesn't win against him, I think she just feels like it's sort of a calling. So the race to me is just getting a little more interesting as we're getting, you know, filing period is over and
right.
We're off to the races.
And we also have my favorite Democrat, Joe Berrios, being picked on. Now, here's the problem with Joe Berrios, as far as I can say. I've known him for years. There's nothing phony about Joe Berrios. He's a Democratic political guy. I'm going to hire my family. I'm going to take care of them. I'm taking care of my friends. I'm part of this larger cog in the machine that in which Mike Madigan is the, you know, Lord triumphant, right? So now he's the one who's being picked on? How does that work, Kristen McQuarrie?
You know, not too many. See, now I have had my coffee, and now you're going to make me upset because not too many stories or political figures or political dynasties or combine type issues make me more angry than maybe this one. He is being protected. You have Rahm Emanuel sticking up for him. You have Preckwinkle. You have the whole Democratic Party establishment and all those progressives.
Yeah.
Who want to protect minorities and have a small voice. They're all, I think, many reasons. I think people genuinely like Joe Berrios, like you said. He has this very often, he's authentic. They have a, maybe you could say, healthy dose of being wary of the press and the media. So I don't think they necessarily even believe what they're reading. I think they don't fully understand it either.
I don't think they care. I think they know.
Number one.
And they don't give two figs.
But how deplorable is that? That you have a property tax system that we all know is broken and favors people with clout, hurts minority communities. Now we have, it's not just a news story and an anecdotal story. Now we have the numbers to back up what we all have been.
It's not a column is railing about this 15 years ago. Nah. Like, oh, Cass, you're crazy.
Exactly.
Mike Madigan's awesome. Let's put him on WGN and talk about how great he is.
Ugh.
Yeah, sorry, but it's true. That's what they used to do whenever I'd rip him.
Nah.
And they have made millions and millions of dollars.
That's the piece that kills me. Yeah. I mean, you can probably make a case for why, you know, minorities and poor people aren't involved or aren't getting their assessments changed because one, knowledge, power, and all that stuff, money to pay a lawyer. The whole system has been gamed by them and changed just to make tax assessment lawyers wealthy. And
you mean the two guys who control taxes, at least debate about taxes, are Mike Madigan and his buddy Eddie Burke. And what do they do for a living? Oh, I'm sorry, Kristen. What do they do?
They run tax appeal,
right? And so, I mean, and that's the part that just drives me nuts is that there's all this rigmarole and red tape and these things you would have to go and say, hey, your taxes are going to be through the roof unless you hire one of our friends or someone who knows one of our friends to fix it for you. That's such a crock. I mean, we had Kennedy in a couple months ago.
Yeah, he was started.
He railed on. I mean, he said that it's essentially organized crime, but it's legal.
Oddly enough, though, Jeff, Kennedy is backed by the Dailies, and they were part. I mean, they allowed this thing. You know, it's not like they stood up. The Daily Boys didn't stand up.
Nobody has.
Yell.
It's
right?
just, but can you imagine if the tables were turned and the assessor were a Republican or a conservative?
Oh, man.
Deplorable. Oh, man. It'd people be would be calling for him to be in jail and
it'd be across the nation. People would be up in arms of what's happening here.
Yeah. So very willing to look the other way when it's the, and the other thing is, I don't know if our stories have touched on this, but maybe not as much. The Cook County assessor, no matter who it is, when it was Hines, when it was Houlihan, that is kind of the money engine of the Cook County Party,
yes.
and provides a lot of relief for somebody like Mike Madigan, who can't single-handedly raise everything. I mean, he can't raise all the money for all the statewide races. He's the chairman of the state Democratic Party. So that money engine is what they're protecting.
Like the comptroller. The two of the major spots that Democrats cannot lose. That's why the state controller's race was the same way.
Mm-hmm.
It's who gets paid off. Who gets paid? Who in line? What vendors? Who gets paid? Okay, and don't tell me that you don't get paid. You know, I like Susana Mendoza. Don't get me wrong. I mean, it's not a personal. It's just the way the office is structured. Why do they love it so much? Why do the Democrats love those offices? Because they're about, without them, there's no control, there's no machine. So is Mike Madigan getting deconstructed here? Because the way to do it, obviously, is to take Berrios out. Rauner's doing this 4 years too late. But is this the sign that Madigan and Burke have to look at each other and say, hey, we're pushing 80. We're wealthy as lords. Time to go?
No. No. And it's even if Berrios gets pushed out, it's not like the assessment system can be turned on a dime. You only get reassessed every 3 years. What I've seen are people getting into those roles, even at the Board of Review, which is the second layer of appeal. They start taking money from the same attorneys, and they start building up that war chest. And I've just never seen true reform, even from people who run that way. They kind of become part of that fabric of the mm-hmm. system. So I wouldn't expect that if Joe Berrios gets too toxic, they will turn on him. But he's not there yet.
Did you ever see the movie Goodfellas?
Mm-hmm.
In the movie Goodfellas, the guy gets in trouble. He owes money. And I'm not saying this has anything to do. I'm just bringing it up because I like movies. The guy gets in trouble. The bar owner gets in trouble. And he gets a partner. He's worried that he might get in serious trouble, that another gangster might beat him up. So he goes to get a partner, the boss of the other gangster.
Smart,
gets a partner.
Right? Mm-hmm.
And then ultimately, at the end of it, there's no money for him. He's done. Everything gets sucked out. I just wonder how that works in Chicago. And I wonder if that's what we do here. Like a whole state and city run by gangsters for 100 years. They won't call themselves gangsters. They call themselves civic leaders. But this whole muscle thing back and forth, that concerns me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's why cities die. I guess we'll talk, if we can have you back, can we talk about movies for the holidays and all that?
Yes.
All right, will
I
you ever come back? You just go, you run away, you go off into your little ventures. We don't see you for weeks.
And you can, yeah.
I know.
Listeners are demanding, Christian.
They sure are.
Oh, they're demanding me.
Yes,
right.
They are.
Right, yes.
All right.
And I promise not to take my kids to the awful Throw Up in Church elf movie, right?
No, that was the other movie.
Oh.
That was the one where it was supposed to be funny where a guy threw up in church.
Right.
I'm sorry. Drunk at church and thrown up?
Oh, that. Okay. Right? I didn't realize there was
it Seth Rogen
yeah.
that did that?
Okay.
Never
gotcha.
Watching you
yeah.
again. Seth Rogen of the Damned. That's all I'm saying. For Jeff Carlin, Kristen McQuarrie, John Cass. It's been another episode of the Chicago Way, and what I said about Denmark, I just want to repeat it. What C.S. Lewis used to say, and what he said in The Abolition of Man, and it's probably a book you might want to get people for Christmas. We make men without chests and expect of them virtue and enterprise. We laugh at honor and are shocked to find traitors in our midst. we castrate and bid the geldings be fruitful. Talk to you next week, everybody.